I'm Jason Charbonneau. I'm going to be talking about UFOs and the controversy over the mystery airships in 1996-7 in U.S. and Canadian newspapers. So most of you maybe heard of the airship phenomenon by now, but it happened basically for about 8 months between 1896 and 1897, about 7 years before the Wright brothers flew the first working aircraft at Kitty Hawk. Thousands of people across Western North America saw mysterious aerial lights in the sky and sometimes full-blown aircraft. There were hundreds of sightings and thousands of witnesses, mostly in the United States, and over 1,200 newspaper articles published on the phenomenon in 408 different papers in 41 American states and 6 Canadian provinces. And newspaper articles are the only extant sources on this phenomenon. The craft that people saw, as you can see here, and these are some of the only illustrations done of what people saw, were clearly absurd. Most of them had things like flapping wings, technologies that could not possibly have worked, and yet still outperformed, still really performed decades ahead of their time. Pulled off maneuvers that just weren't possible at the time. When the sighting stopped quite abruptly in April of 1897, no culprits ever came forward, no flying machines were ever unveiled to the public, and there was no great leap forward in aviation technology as one would expect if this were the work of some secret inventor, which was really the default assumption at the time. So because it involves flying machines, and because the mystery was never really resolved, the airship mystery has often been compared to the modern UFO phenomenon. But the exact relationship between these two waves has never really been made clear, and it's never really been explained what these things were. And the secondary literature really comes to no conclusion, or no consensus whatsoever. So I'd like to suggest that the key to explaining airships and explaining UFOs is to refocus our attention away from the craft themselves and towards people that saw them, people who discussed them, and the public discussion in the newspapers. So to that end, my presentation is going to explore some of the newspaper articles of the time and to situate my findings within the contemporary discourse on aviation. I'm going to argue that the phenomenon reflected Americans' expectations for flight and helped generate enthusiasm for aviation, and may even have helped hasten the progress of American aeronautics. So before I'm actually going to get into the sightings, I'd like to talk a little bit about aviation before the sightings began. The airships weren't exactly unexpected at the time. By 1896, there had already been many decades of working towards flying machines. So really briefly, the first manned air balloon was flown in France in 1783, the first monoplane in England in 1848, and first glider in 1853. So by the 1890s, experimental flying machines were flown on the regular, and aeronauts were constantly inching their way towards longer and more predictable flights. So you have people like Horatio Phillips in England, this bizarre contraption, Otto Lilienthal in Germany, Samuel Langley at the Smithsonian Institute in the U.S., and Octa Chanute in the U.S. as well. So by 1896, these men had already proven that craft could generate lift and fly, they just couldn't steer them yet. So for this reason, flight was never really referred to as such. It was referred to as aerial navigation, because it was the navigation part they were trying to work out. So in addition to overcoming these technical problems of navigation, aeronauts were also trying to overcome a stigma imposed by the public and the academy. The New York World, in May of 1896, claimed that just 17 years ago, a career could be ruined for lecturing on the subject of aeronautics. The Bedford Daily Mail in Indiana claimed that an interest in flight was indicative of a mild form of lunacy in the public mind. But if you read these papers at the time, you get a sense of a recent sea change in the respectability of aviation. The New York World, the same New York World article, claimed that now the much-derided cranks are having their innings, and also noted that Mr. Chanute here had just been elected the president of the American Society of Engineers. So in the months before the sightings began, papers were regularly reporting on experimental test flights, with great enthusiasm. The New York World in May 17, 1896, reported on Samuel Langley's aerodrome, which was successfully flown for I can't remember how long, like say a year. It looks remarkably like a World War I era triplane, actually. And the article opened by claiming that readers were reading of the fulfillment of a world old dream, and went on to say that today we are on the threshold of a more important application of science even than the steam locomotive. Professor Langley's flying machine introduces a revolution in transportation more radical than that which any invention has wrought in the past. Inventors, scientists, and military men occasionally commented on the promise of aviation. In January of 1896, a Lieutenant J.K. Cree of the U.S. Army published an article in the North American Review expounding on the many benefits of aviation. Cree claimed that an airship will cause an entire revolution in the art of war, more stupendous than that caused by any invention since that of gunpowder, that will nullify strategy and make vital changes in the principles of attack and defense. Cree claimed that aviation would supersede naval technologies, that fleets of airships would replace navies, and that ground defenses would become obsolete. The result, according to Cree, would be an incentivizing diplomacy and shortening wars. The Salt Lake Tribune, which reported on Cree's article, claimed that if wars were fought by airship, there would be less destruction and less loss of life a thousandfold than by a forcible landing. The Oshkosh Daily Northwestern claimed that the next great war will be fought in clouds, out of sight perhaps of earthly spectators. Of course, airships really did the opposite, just brought civilians closer into combat, but at the time there was great enthusiasm. At the time, the Cubans were fighting a war of independence against the Spanish, and there was a lot of talk in American papers about the U.S. Army bombing Havana by airship in order to free the Cubans. In August of 1896, reports began circling of an arsenal in the... Oh, sorry, this is illustration done of J.K. Cree's article about airships bombing and fortifications. And they said they were going to use dynamite torpedoes, which I think is just a great term. A great band name if anybody's looking for one. But in August of 1896, a report began circling of an arsenal in the clouds. Papers are reported on this, claim that it was being built in Florida for the express purpose of bombing Havana. It was said that it would fly above the gunfire and drop dynamite torpedoes, just as Cree had described. The Oneida Republican described this warship as a fin de siècle system of warfare that promised to revolutionize all other modern methods. So in short, by 1896, a growing minority of Americans believed that airships had the potential to revolutionize transportation, minimize the destruction of war, but they're still struggling against the stigma, and clearly kind of chomping at the bit, getting ahead of themselves, trying to announce the introduction of flight. So, onto the sightings themselves. The majority of the sightings occurred in 8 months between November of 1896 and April of 1897. Most witnesses saw only lights, just as many witnesses to modern UFOs did, which they claimed were distinctly electrical in nature, and compared them to the arc lights common in street lamps at the time. The first widely publicized sighting occurred on November 17, 1896, over Sacramento. Most people saw only what they described as a powerful headlight, but those who claimed that they saw some sort of structure behind the light claimed that it had an egg-shaped body with four propellers pointed straight downwards, and that it kind of moved through the air with a swaying or undulating motion, which at least a few witnesses described as if it was kind of bouncing on rapids downstream. There were repeat sightings over Sacramento and the Bay Area on November 22nd. This time, two lights were seen, one pointed straight forward, one pointed straight down. Again, those who claimed that they saw a structure claimed that it had an egg-shaped body. Some said that it had flapping wings. Others said that it had propellers. There was always lots of disagreement over what these craft looked like. There were similar beams of light seen over Tacoma, San Jose, Washington, and Alberta, and BC in the following days. The airship story then died out by about mid-December of 1896, but was revived with new sightings over Nebraska on February 2nd. And the sightings then spread to Kansas, Missouri, Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Michigan, kind of generally moving east, then reverse course, moved down through Missouri, and arrived in Texas and Louisiana by about mid-April of 1897. Now, amongst all these mass sightings, there are also a few what we might call close encounters of the third kind. And if I'd known I had more time, I'd prepared a description of some of these because they're really quite remarkable. Most of these were printed in April of 1897 during the real peak of the airship wave. Most of these sightings had only one or two witnesses as opposed to big groups. And then the typical sighting, an aircraft would land. Human pilots would get out, have some sort of exchange with the witness, often ask for some sort of trivial favors. One witness was asked to mail some letters for the airship pilots. A few witnesses were asked for water. Then the pilot might show the witness around the craft a little, tell them a bit about how it works. And every craft was described differently. Some were described as running on steam, others on electricity. Every craft was described differently. All the mystery pilots described their own backgrounds differently. Some claim to be secret inventors, other claim to be from different planets. There's really no consistency in the descriptions of the craft or the descriptions of the pilots. And then the pilots would jump inside these craft and they would fly away, and the whole encounter would last maybe half an hour to an hour. So by April of 1897, during the peak of the wave, the story had become a national obsession. The Galveston Daily News claimed that the airship was the sole topic of conversation in all circles in this city. Even those hostile to the airship story, and a lot of papers were, most papers were, agreed that it had dominated public discourse. The Chicago Record, a paper very hostile to the story, spoke of the airship disease, a terrible scourge that had virtually covered the country. So how else did people react? Well, in my research, I found that any commentators reproduced the same triumphalism of earlier coverage of test flights and viewed airships as icons of human ingenuity and technological progress, if not as literal flying machines. Descriptions of the craft conveyed a sense of awe and wonder. I've just compiled some of the phrases used to describe the craft. They're described as a mystic flying light, mysterious aerial visitor, mysterious heavenly visitor, mysterious airship, aerial monster, mechanical wonder, or ghostly airship. For large groups, sightings were a thrilling and positive experience. People held airship watching parties outside their homes and usually welcomed the airships when they came to their local towns. At closer range, however, where craft could be more clearly seen, people were much more likely to feel fear and awe. People in Kansas ran to their cellars when they saw an airship, fearing that a great calamity was impending. C.G. Williams of Greenville, Texas, claimed he was frightened out of his senses when he saw an airship land. There were also several cases in which animals, usually dogs and horses, showed unusual amounts of fear in reaction to the airships. And most of you probably know that's also kind of a feature of modern UFO phenomena, is that animals just go wild. Many interpreted the sightings religiously, and I think that religious interpretations are actually really downplayed in the secondary literature. Like at all times, it seems people believed that they were living in Yeshatan, or the end times, and the airships were naturally seen as supernatural omens. The Dallas Morning News claimed that some believed that the end of time is drawing near, and that the strange visitations are heavenly inspectors going about to judge the world. The Austin American Statesman claimed that airships were manned and sailed by celestial crews. The San Antonio Express claimed that preachers say it is from the other world and is the advent courier of the second coming of Christ. Jim Smith, a black man, believed that the airship was the return of Noah's Ark, with wing-like attachments going to save the black residents of the Mississippi lowlands from a flood. But despite these supernatural interpretations, the dominant opinion was very much that these were mortal creations, the work of some secret Thomas Edison-like inventor, who was testing his test craft before unveiling it to the world. So everybody kind of expected that, you know, within a few days or a few weeks, there was going to be this great revelation, and we were all going to have flying machines. Of course, it never came. But even knowing that they were man-made, people still interpreted these as awesome icons of technological triumph, and early glimpses of a technology that would soon change the world for the better. This idea was expounded even by the mystery pilots themselves in cases of close encounters. The Milwaukee Sentinel reported on a letter supposedly dropped from an airship, which promised that the introduction of flight would revolutionize all present methods of transportation. Another pilot, who identified himself only as Wilson and showed up in a few encounters, said that flying machines would be in general use worldwide within 2 years. He was not quite right. C.G. Williams, after giving an inspection of a landed craft, came away with a glowing review, saying that it is a grand invention, and I am fully convinced that in a short while we shall discard slow railroad trains and ocean steamers. Indeed, the hope amongst many of those in the West was that the airships would replace the railroad's monopoly on transportation. Governor Leidy of Kansas, after seeing an airship for himself, said that, "I don't know what the thing is, but I hope it may yet solve the railway problem." Again, the plot to bomb the Spanish reemerged in the sighting reports. One man was quoted in a paper as saying that he believed that the airships were a secret design by Thomas Edison, which the government was testing for use against Spain. Even the airship pilots themselves pushed the Spanish connection. The Auburn Granger reported that the crew of a landed craft told a witness that they were carrying dynamite to Cuba to destroy the Spanish Navy. In reporting on the airship sightings, the Austin American Statesman took the opportunity to list all the benefits. And I quote, "The airship will be an additional extermination of distance, and it will draw continents together as the railroad locomotives drew cities together. It will obviate all the dangers of ocean transportation and laugh at storms. It will ensure safety in penetrating and exploring savage countries. It may be the means of discovering the North Pole and other continents. It will make war so dreadful that armies will be disbanded and ocean navies will be superseded by the commerce of the air. There is no telling of the great extent of the possibilities. The Galveston Daily News in Texas, in reporting on the sightings, put the airships in the longer history of man's mastery over nature in a way that encouraged readers, scientists, and inventors to dream big. And I quote, 100 years ago, it would never have been dreamed that the land could be navigated as it is today. And yet, one by one, the forces of nature are now rendering themselves to man. Therefore, there is nothing that should be laughed at. The Brownsville Daily Herald in Texas claimed that that which has been the dream of men for many generations has been done through the tireless efforts of the genius of the present day. So in short, papers took sightings as a reminder of the limitless potential of science and engineering, and even papers dismissive of the airship stories were equally reverent of human ingenuity. Some writers said explicitly that even if the airships were fake, real airships were soon to come, and that they would come in the same kind of way with these really mysterious distant sightings. And in a situation similar to modern UFO discourse, academics were planted firmly against the airship phenomenon. They were having none of it. Meet G.W. Hugh, who we might call the arch-skeptic of the day. He was at Dearborn Observatory, which is actually the same place that J. Allen Hynek was at when he was the chief UFO debunker in the 50s and 60s. Kind of an interesting parallel. Hugh claimed that all sightings were just misidentifications of the star Alpha Orionis. And witnesses and proponents relied on their observations, whereas skeptics, like today, relied on deductive arguments and arguments about the plausibility of such a scenario. So the same tension between first-hand experience and expert opinion that dominates the modern UFO discourse dominated the airship discourse as well. The Burlington Daily Hawkeye summed it up nicely by claiming, thus the matter stands, the opinion of the masses launched against the learned minority. So where am I going with all this? Well, I think it's unlikely that the airships were physically real. The technologies, as I said, were clearly absurd. They reflected past technologies or imagined future technologies, more so than they actually reflected future technologies or what we would see in a decade or so later. And they certainly weren't extraterrestrials. I mean, these ships could have never flown in the air, let alone in outer space. Flapping wings don't do much in outer space. And yet there are too many witnesses and too many sightings for these all to have been mistaken stars. So what were they, and what is the connection to the modern UFO phenomenon? Well, I think that certain ufologists like Carl Jung, if we can call him a ufologist, write a lot about UFOs. Jacques Vallée, a hero of mine. More recently, Whitley Strieber and Jeffrey Kripal have argued that the aesthetic qualities of UFOs are constructed by the observer. The appearance of UFOs in pilots reflect witnesses' cosmology and technological frame of reference. UFOs, whatever they are and wherever they come from, manifest in our physical reality in a way that reflects how we expect them to appear. UFOs insert themselves in witnesses' mythology in order to influence human belief systems over long periods of time. So I think that the airships were an earlier manifestation of the same phenomenon behind UFOs today, cloaked in the aesthetics and the technologies of the 19th century. And I would suggest that perhaps the airships appeared in order to amplify the nascent optimism and the potential of flight at the end of the 19th century. Sightings shocked and wowed witnesses and humbled them before the glory of flying machines, and pitted a broad base of believers against conservatives in the scientific establishment, and helped propel crank science to the status of a national obsession. Sightings engaged experts and the public alike in imagining a revolution in war, transportation, and commerce. Sightings served to prepare Americans for this near-to-come revolution, and maybe even helped bring it about by stirring public interest in this fringe science. So I don't think we'll ever really be able to determine exactly what the impact of the airship phenomenon was on the history of aviation, but I think it's interesting that contemporaries had already imagined a connection. On April 21st of 1897, the very tail end of the last big wave, the Galveston Daily News claimed that the best way to work out results in any line is to excite a general interest in the public mind. Nobody need be at all astonished if the airship of fancy should in due course of experiment and invention become an airship of fact. Thank you.